This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's a tension that hangs in the air like humidity when you talk about the Adelson family. It's not just because Donna's now a convicted murderer or because Charlie's already been sentenced to life without parole. It's because there's still a name that keeps echoing through every courtroom whisper, every redacted affidavit, every quiet, who's next question. In a saga that simply refuses to die, that name, Wendy Adelson. Her. For nearly a decade, Wendy has walked a razor-thin line, somewhere between witness and suspect, between family member and possible co-conspirator. Prosecutors have never charged her. She's never worn an orange jumpsuit. She's never had to stare down a jury. She's always maintained her innocence, but her name keeps coming up, not as a side note, not as a background noise, but as a key figure in a story that's already left behind a body, a broken family, and two prison sentences with more potential to come. Those two are just within the family. Add two more for McBanawa and Sigfrido. It all began with a murder, a calculated execution-style ambush in the driveway of a quiet Tallahassee neighborhood. The victim was Dan Markell. Who's Dan Markell? A respected Florida State law professor, a father of two, and Wendy Adelson's ex-husband. The two had divorced a year earlier, and their post-marriage relationship, it was strained, to put it lightly, particularly over one issue, custody. Wendy wanted to move the children to South Florida, closer to her family, or more so Donna wanted that to happen. And Wendy, well, she never learned how to say no. Dan opposed it, and the court agreed with him. He was shot in his garage on July 18th of 2014, just hours after dropping his sons off at daycare. Surveillance footage captured a Toyota Prius tailing him around town. A neighbor heard the gunshots. Dan was still alive when first responders found him, but barely. He died the next day. At first, investigators had no leads. There was no sign of forced entry, no obvious motive, but eventually, the trail led south to Miami, and then to Catherine McBanawa, Sigfrido Garcia, and Luis Riviera. I take that back. Three other people behind bars. Then you add Donna and Charlie. That's five total.
The dominoes keep falling.
Rivera and Garcia were the ones who pulled the trigger. Literally, Rivera later flipped on Garcia, describing in detail how two men had driven from Miami to Tallahassee in a rented Prius to carry out the murder for hire. And the target, yes, Wendy's ex-husband, Dan Markell. Catherine McBanawa was Garcia's ex-girlfriend and the mother of his children. And at the time of the murder, was Charlie Adelson's girlfriend. You playing along here? This is like a bad soap opera. Wendy's brother is Charlie. Okay. Charlie was seeing McBanawa. McBanawa, still tight with the baby daddy, and knew that he could pull a trigger. Or he knew someone who could. And that's where everything changed. Prosecutors allege that McBanawa was the go-between. That Charlie paid the hitmen through her, that the Adelson family, particularly Donna and Charlie, wanted Dan out of the way so Wendy could relocate the children to Miami and they could all be a happy, wonderful, warm family, even though the kid's dad is dead and was assassinated in his own driveway. Oh, the kids will get over that. Kids are, they're durable. They can get through things. In 2019, Sigfrido Garcia was convicted of first-degree murder. Rivera, who testified against him, took a plea and received a 19-year sentence. Catherine McBanawa was tried in 2019, but the jury couldn't reach a verdict. In 2022, she was retried and convicted. And then came Charlie. Charlie was arrested in 2022 and convicted in 2023 of murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and solicitation. Prosecutors used undercover FBI recordings captured in a Bug Dolce Vita restaurant in South Florida to show how Charlie spoke in veiled terms about law enforcement pressure and TV shows while referencing the fallout from Dan's death. The code wasn't hard to crack. After Charlie fell, the spotlight turned to Donna. Donna Adelson, well, she'd been implicated early in the investigation. Her emails, texts, the jailhouse calls all pointed to an obsessive interest in removing Dan from her daughter's life. She referred to him in ugly terms. She'd looked up Hitman online. She made a series of suspicious financial transfers after the murder, like 40-some checks directly from the business. Like you do to pay off Hitman. She even suggested to Wendy on a recorded call, maybe they could pay someone to fix things. Still, she wasn't arrested until 2023. Taken into custody at the Miami airport, about to board a flight to Vietnam with a no-return ticket. Prosecutors said she was trying to flee. She called it a vacation. Like you do. In April of 2024, Donna pled guilty. And if you want to go back and watch that trial, it's here on our channel. You can certainly do that. 40 years in prison, no trial, just a cold admission. She helped arrange the murder of her former son-in-law. She is going to die in prison. And that brings us back to Wendy, the only adult member of the Adelson inner circle who hasn't been charged. And again, she maintains her innocence. Here's the part that matters. Wendy has been officially named in court filings as an unindicted co-conspirator, okay? This is one of those reasons, one of those five reasons why she may be next. This is not to conjure, or is that not conjecture here, or to conjure up ideas that she's something that she's not. That's legal language. It means prosecutors believe she was involved, but for whatever reason, they haven't brought formal charges yet. So the question becomes, why not? And more importantly, what might change that, if anything? Is she involved enough to have charges brought against her? There are five reasons why pressure is mounting, why legal observers and maybe even prosecutors are circling back. Or as the prosecutor even said, stay tuned. First, the motive. Wendy had the most to gain from Dan's death. She wanted to move to Miami. Dan wouldn't allow it. The court sided with him. After the murder, the legal roadblock vanished. And within weeks, she did exactly what she'd been trying to do. She moved with the kids to South Florida. Problem solved, right? Roadblock's gone. Dan died under horrible circumstances. What could possibly make it look like maybe there was some connection over here? Second, the benefit. Not only did she relocate, she also changed the children's last names from Markel to Adelson. Fast, quietly. Her reasoning? She claimed it was for their safety. But to Dan's family and to many following the case, it felt like erasure. Like cutting off a memory of a man who'd just been assassinated in his own driveway. Hey, why are we changing our name? Daddy just died, so you're an Adelson now. They got the connections. Wendy was in constant contact with her family in the months before and after the murder. Her phone records, text, emails show a tight loop of communication of this lovely enmeshed family called the Adelsons. On the day of the killing, her phone pinged in locations that later drew a lot of attention. Investigators have scrutinized her statements, at times contradictory. I noted how she avoided acknowledging any suspicions about her family's possible involvement, even as the walls began to close in. She doesn't remember a lot. I don't remember. Oh, you're asking about that? Oh, the TV that's broken with a giant crack in it. I wonder what that's all about. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know. The language. Fourth, wiretaps, jail calls, undercover recordings, revealed coded conversations among the Adelsons. Phrases like the TV show, everything is under control and they don't know anything, were peppered throughout exchanges. Charlie and Donna clearly knew Well, I don't know that they clearly knew the police were listening, but they didn't speak, in as coded of a language as they thought they were. Wendy, in her own testimony, appeared similarly careful. But some of her answers raised eyebrows. Not lies, more like omissions, half-truths, allegedly. Strategic forgetfulness, I guess, is what one may call it if you watch her testimony on the stand, which I encourage you to do, all of it, from every trial. And fifth, the cooperation. Donna Adelson is now convicted. She's serving 40 years. There is widespread speculation, including among legal analysts, that she may have agreed to cooperate as part of a plea deal. If she talks, if she provides prosecutors with hard details about who knew what and when, then Wendy's position could shift dramatically. What could possibly happen behind bars if Donna raises a hand and says, I have a couple things to say. Will she? Won't she? Is that even happening? There's a lot of speculation. And that goes for Charlie, too. Will deals be made? Will family turn on family? Or is it all just scuttlebutt of the internet? So the pressure comes in. It's not just public curiosity or internet sleuthing. It's the reality that Wendy is now the last Adelson standing. Well, kind of. Harvey's still there. And the motive, the benefit, the timeline, the family dynamics, all point in a direction of a lot of curiosity towards her. To be clear, there is no direct evidence, at least publicly right now, that Wendy Adelson knew a murder was being planned. She has not been charged. She has not been arrested. She has repeatedly denied any involvement. That doesn't mean prosecutors are done. Because cases evolve. Conspirators flip. Priorities shift. And the more pieces you have on the board, the more pressure you can apply to the ones who haven't moved. There's also psychological elements here. In conspiracy cases, especially ones involving families, one member is often kept insulated, intentionally. Not for legal protection, but for emotional distancing. The logic goes, don't tell Wendy, just get it done. That way she can plausibly deny involvement. That way everyone gets what they want. And no one has to face the full truth. But if somebody flips on the inside, if the state gets cooperation from the inside of people who are already spending the rest of their lives behind bars and have nothing to lose other than things to gain, the insulation can break. And Wendy's proximity to the conspiracy, the benefit she reaped, the timeline she followed, the post-murder behavior could all become more than just suspicious. Could become evidence. For now, though, Wendy walks free. She continues to live in South Florida. She's raising her children. She's built a new life. But the shadow of this case does follow her in every legal filing, every interview, every time another Adelson is taken down. Because this story isn't finished. And the question hanging over isn't who did it. That part's been answered. The question is who knew? And did they stay silent? Justice isn't about solving a crime alone. It's about holding everyone accountable. And when the motives are personal, the stakes become generational. If Wendy Adelson is innocent, truly unaware of her family's plans, and I hope to God she is, because I can see a scenario where that is the case, then she's endured years of scrutiny for nothing. If she knew more than she said, if she benefited while looking away, then the clock is ticking. Because justice may be slow, but it doesn't forget. Not when a man was murdered in his own driveway. Not when a family was shattered. And not when one final name still hasn't been called. Let me know your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not already there, check us out. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to find us and press subscribe. If you're listening to us on the podcast platform, please hit subscribe there so you don't miss any of our coverage on this and the many cases we got for you right here at True Crime Today. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.